cliffcentral.com.
Progressive, cultured, and brave.
And now, the moment you've all been waiting for.
The Threaded Exchange with CRB Ely. Live on Cliff Central.
Welcome to this week's episode of The Threaded Exchange. As you know, this is a platform that is progressive, it's cultured, it's brave. And on the show, it's always about bringing people who are inspiring, especially young Black South Africans who are doing incredible things in different industries. And yeah, and on the show, we call them up and they talk about their story. And, you know, within their story, we find what inspires us, we find what moves us, and we also find the lessons that we can learn on their journeys. Last week I had Marcel Flores, New York-based blogger. Thank you so much for all the reactions. Please don't forget to tweet us at hashtag The Threaded Exchange. Don't forget to tweet me at CRB Ely as well as cliffcentral.com. Now, today's guest, not only is a friend of mine, but he's brave, I think, to go against Levi's, to go against all these other denim brands, to say, you know what, I'm going to build my own homegrown denim brand. Today I've got a guy called Tsepo. Many of you might know him as Tsepo the Jean Maker. He makes denim, man, and he makes incredible denim. And today we're going to find out his story. We're going to talk about being an entrepreneur, being a designer in South Africa. You know, what are the challenges that he's facing as a young entrepreneur? What do people think of his brand? So without further ado, Tsepo, welcome.
Yo, Sia, what a beautiful introduction. That's amazing. I loved it. Yeah, like a superstar right now.
Yeah, you are though, superstar. You're a superstar.
I'm trying.
Yeah.
How are you? Thank you for having me on the show.
I'm good. How are you?
I'm great, brother. Yeah. It's been a great year. First 2 months been just too good for me. Haven't sold anything, but it's just been a progressive year.
Yeah.
And me being on the show, I look at you and you inspire me. You're my friend, but I'm like, oh.
No, man, no. Not at all, brother. I think we're all here to inspire each other.
Absolutely.
And to just,
absolutely,
you know, have these conversations and hopefully inspire other people as
absolutely.
Well. I think that's so important. I think as creatives, we like to sit in our rooms and, you know, have these amazing conversations, but it's very seldom that we
get to share them with the world.
And I think that's what, for me, the show is about, just to share these incredible conversations that I have with people on a daily basis.
Absolutely.
So tell me, dude, like, I know you now as Tsepo the Jean Maker. When I met you, you were working for a brand called African Swiss. You were doing the marketing.
Yeah.
And now you run your own denim company.
Yeah.
But where does the story begin for Tsepo? Where is Tsepo from? What is Tsepo about? What is, paint us a picture of how you grew up and, you know, what was that about?
Okay. I was born in Mpumalanga in Lydenburg. That's Lydenburg is also called, the place is also called Mashishing. It's a Bedi place. I'm Bedi. And when I was five, my mom and dad moved to Daveyton, stayed in Daveyton. They separated, had to go to Tsakane. Tsakane is about 25 km in the east, far east
so
of Johannesburg.
So your parents separated?
Yeah, my parents separated when I was eight.
Eight?
Yeah, after grade one, they were like, this thing is not working out.
But I mean, didn't that fuck you up? I think like my parents separating really fucked me up. Like in a sense that like it's the first time in my life. I mean, as a young kid, you want that solid foundation.
Absolutely.
You know, and when a parent leaves, that foundation is sort of, not that the other parent can't do well to raise you, but it sort of wakes you up a little bit. You
it
know,
did,
it makes
it
you
did.
Grow up at a young age. Didn't that get to you as well?
It really changed how I looked at life. I grew, when my dad was around, everything was nice. My dad had a car. He was working in a bank. He had everything. He was a god to me. And all of a sudden, he's taken away from me. You know, he's gone. Like, no, I was my dad's best friend. We moved to my granny's house, my grandparents' house, and my granddad was, I think he was supposed to take that role of being a father, but because it's very old school, so it was very hard.
And also, I mean, that's another thing when you're growing up with a single parent is that you get all these figures that want to resemble
but it's not
because that's not your dad.
Yeah,
no one could be like your dad.
No one could ever be like my dad. I mean, like, even today, my granddad and I don't have the perfect father and son relationship because he's not open to anything. He's not open to conversations. Yeah. Let's talk about girls. Let's talk about clothes. At some point, he thought, like, probably I'm gay because of the stuff that I do. And he's really, really old school, which kind of affected how I look at life. And I never ran to him.
So would you say, I mean, I can draw a lot of similarities, you know, growing up as well, mm-hmm. you know, my dad also sort of, my parents separated and my dad sort of left the picture.
Yeah.
And me and my dad never got the chance to bond. So I was around my mom quite a lot.
Absolutely.
And
yeah.
within the Likewise. Two families, there was a lot of people trying to resemble
your father,
my father.
Yeah.
And because of the position I had in my family as a first mm-hmm. grandson, everyone felt that they wanted to shape me a certain way.
Yeah.
And I was into music.
They wanted
music.
To make you yeah. a man. Yeah.
Yes. And I was into music. You know, I was into arts. I was emotional as a kid. And, you know, that made me feel, I think that's where also my depression comes from, is that from a young age, I felt very misunderstood because I didn't fit the environment that I was raised in.
Likewise with me, same thing happened with me. I was lucky that when I, my granny's a pastor, so we grew up in church, and that's when I met my friends, because my granny never allowed us to play on the streets, you know, and we stay in the township and everybody plays in the streets, and I stay at home and I don't have PlayStations, I don't have everything, but she's like, nah, I need a 13, you know. At some point when I was probably in high school, my first 2 years of high school, I joined the church choir, and that's where I met my friends Boo and Jules, and we all discovered that we have the same story. All our dads left at the same time. We were raised by single parents and our grandparents. And we kind of started telling people that, listen, we are blood brothers.
Yeah.
And we have the same father, different mothers. And that was the story. And we started making fun of our dads. We're like, my dad left. Like, how my dad left? Like, he was going to fetch water outside. And that's how he left. He never came back again. So we started having those kind of conversations. And it kind of really never fucked us too much. It made it much more easy for me to face the world.
Because you had a group of friends you could relate with.
I had a group of friends who I could relate with. They were my fathers. They were my brothers. They were my best friends.
That's something I could relate to as well, is that, you know, I never had friends. I never fitted in. Also because I was born in Cape Town, and we grew up in Langa Township, you know. And when I was young, I think I was like grade 5 when I left Langa Township to go live in a white area, which is Constantia.
Yeah.
And that's when my parents' problems had started, when we were still in Langa. And now when we moved to Constantia, I mean, being a black kid growing up in the township and now being moved into a super white area, then my dad left.
It's a huge shift.
I had no friends. I could relate to no one.
Yeah.
But that all changed for me when I got into high school in grade 10.
Yeah.
That's when I met my friends. Yeah. And I think that's the thing that's actually funny, when you saying you and your friends are all fucked up and you laugh about it, is that me and my friends are also fucked up. I think all my friends, think about it, you and I are friends and we were raised by single mothers. My best friends from Cape Town are also raised by single mothers. So it's actually crazy. I always say to people, I feel like I attract my tribe, because
I feel like I know most of the people that I can spend time with and have deep conversations with, we have the similar background.
Yeah.
All our dads are gone.
Yeah. I think also it's a point of relation, you know, because, you know, I think for me personally, I mean, you can quote me badly for saying this, but I find that I can't relate strongly to people who have had everything growing up. You know, because not that I'm saying they're bad people, but for me it's very hard to relate, because I know what it's like not to have
no common denominator.
Yes, I know what it's like not to have anything, and I feel the need to always work hard to get something. And all my friends, because they also, we have similar as well, we want to work and we inspire each other. We're innovators, we drive forward, and sometimes people have had every single thing they've ever wanted. They live in this comfort, and that frustrates me, because it's like, I'm not saying they should be struggling like us or working hard, but it's like,
What
it's
drives
a,
you?
It's a
what
different energy for me. It's because I'm not used to it. It's such a different energy for me.
You work for everything that you have.
Yes.
You gotta go the extra mile.
Yeah.
You can't go home.
Yeah.
There's nothing you could do. We had another conversation with friends of mine last night, and we were talking about what drives you as a human being. What drives you? Like, why do I really want to be number one in this denim?
What do you think drives you?
I think I'm angry. What got me into
you're angry.
I'm an angry person. I'm very angry. When I didn't have all the stuff that I wanted as a kid, I think everything that drives me is how I grew up, that my dad left.
Yes.
I never had this, the perfect clothes. I never had the perfect lifestyle. I never had this and that. I think that really drove me into becoming an entrepreneur. And I remember going to a workshop with Miles Monroe, and he said, all entrepreneurs are born from anger. And I was like, you make so much sense. I became an entrepreneur from a point of anger, and I didn't choose to become
Anger at what? So are you angry at your father? What are you angry at?
I'm angry at life.
Why?
I'm angry at life because I didn't have the opportunities that other kids had. I'm in grade 5. My friends had their dads, and my mom couldn't afford, because she was a domestic worker at the time. And I loved soccer so much, and I couldn't afford to buy soccer boots.
Yeah.
It really messed with my psyche. Like, it messed me up.
Yeah.
I probably had depression at the time. I was very quiet, you know, and kids would make fun about that.
Yeah.
That you can't afford soccer boots. Who can't afford soccer boots? So that kind of really made me have a low self-esteem. Like, it really pressed me down. And I remember in grade 5 to grade 8, I never said a word in class, probably. I was scared of girls.
So if I could put it into words, you know, looking at your history and your childhood, it seems like you were trapped.
I was trapped.
You know, you wanted to do things, you couldn't do it. Your father had left.
Yeah.
You had no one to be there
and
for you.
And I couldn't explain it. The worst thing is, I can't explain what I'm going through. Like, I can't say it in words. Like,
I'm the same, dude. I struggle so much, especially because I didn't grow up in my mom and I talked about emotions, but being a black man and being depressed is such a taboo.
Yeah.
You know, being sad and feeling trapped to the point where we fail to be able to communicate our emotions effectively.
Yeah.
I think that's the pandemic with black men. I think as black men, we are all so fucked up. And I think that's why black women are so frustrated, is because we don't know how to process emotions effectively.
Yeah.
You know, when we hurt, we resort to anger and conflict.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, we can't say, listen, I'm actually hurt or I'm hurting.
I think I looked at my granddad, and he used to say to us, indoda ayikhali.
Yeah,
you know, okay, my daughter, you gotta fix it, and you're a hard worker. You don't run to your mom, like that guy used to make fun of me. Thinking about it, like he at some point,
dude,
like,
even me growing up, being called, why are you crying? Things like that, and as a kid, that bites on your self-esteem.
It used to grate my fucking tits.
It made me even worse.
It killed me. I look at my friends and people that I grew up around, and they're like, Tsepo, you've changed so much. I'm like, I didn't change. I think I found my platform.
Yeah.
That
you found your way out.
I found my way
out. And now you're fighting to survive.
Yeah. And I think all my nieces, my cousins, and everybody now look at me and they draw inspiration from what I do.
Yeah.
That step, wow, you've fucking changed. You can talk now. You know, you never used to say a word. Nobody knew what you were thinking. Nobody knew what you wanted.
Yeah.
Nobody knew you at all. But now you've changed, and you becoming a leader. That's commendable. And I kind of feel that my growing up, my childhood, my varsity life, my first 2 years of varsity, really molded the kind of person I am today.
Yeah.
And the type of person that I actually want to be.
And I mean, going back to you know, your childhood, I think talking about your childhood is very important, especially for me as well, because who I am today is hugely influenced by my experiences. And I think had my parents not separated, I wouldn't be the Threaded Man. I think it made me consciously aware of, Sia, you need to work fucking hard.
Yeah.
Your dad is gone. Your mother needs you. You need to work. There's no time to chill.
Yes. Yes.
And that for me was what made me independent from a very young age, to be like, you know what? I'm going to work hard. And at the time, I mean, I didn't know I was going to be the Threaded Man or whatever, but it was the first step towards being an entrepreneur.
Yes.
And that's when you take that lonely road.
Yeah.
And I think most people don't understand how lonely it is to be a young black entrepreneur.
It's very lonely. I think my entrepreneurial journey started in grade 5. My mom was a domestic worker, and she couldn't afford to give me lunch money. So she bought me a pack of sweets, Ama breads, and I'd sell those for 20 cents.
Yeah.
And I'd make like 45 rand profit.
Yeah.
That's how I made my money, and that's how I could buy myself stuff. But you know, in as a kid, you don't know how to run a proper business. And there's those girls who are smart you in class. It's like,
Sapangtelo,
you bought my sweet. And you're like, all right, cool, because you're nice. I want to give you five suites and then the business falls, you know, and and you can't come back from that. And that's where my entrepreneurial journey started in grade five in class.
So you're quite a seasoned entrepreneur.
I am a seasoned. I've been doing this for 15 years now, probably.
Oh, wow. Yeah. And how old are you now?
I'm 25.
25. Yeah. So let's talk now. So now you've grown up. How did you get out? How did you, you know, you grew up in a conservative family. There is no money. Because just for entrepreneurs listening out there, you know, I think what's important here is to listen to the journey. I think most of the time there's a lot of young black entrepreneurs who don't have money, who don't have access, and they think they are stuck and that's it.
Yeah.
So, and I think what's important here, and I think to connect the threaded exchange, is I want you to speak through how, you know, not without having money, you're raised by a single parent, how do you make it out?
Okay.
You know, why were you not on drugs? Why were you not robbing people?
Yeah.
You know, why were you not a criminal? Why aren't you in jail right now? Because most of the time as young black kids is that, you know, when the opportunities are gone, we have to feed our families, we go and we commit fucking crime.
Yeah.
So I want to know from you, why not crime? What made you feel that, eish, dingaphuma lapha?
Yeah, I think me being a loner played a huge, huge impact because I couldn't socialize with kids. I couldn't. I was very antisocial. So I wasn't influenced by a lot of things. Growing up with my grandparents, my granny being a pastor, she had some hard rules at home, you know. That really played a huge role in the type of man I am, the type of gentleman I am, and how I treat people, how I respond to people, how I act around people, and how I carry myself out. My environment, there's a lady who said environment is everything, nature is nothing.
Environment is everything.
Nature is nothing.
Nature is nothing.
Yeah.
Cool.
When I started going to the church choir, when I met my friend, Spoo, who's the owner and founder of Skinny Spoo Socks and Jules, we kind of shared the same sentiments and we shared the same background. We come from a background where we don't have money. And we come from four bedroom houses. We live with our single parents and our grandparents. And women raised us. We were raised by women. So we were taught to become gentlemen who respect women, who treat women right.
Yeah.
And we've always wanted to do something for our moms. I wanted to do something for my mom with all my heart because seeing my dad not there and seeing...
And seeing that hurt.
It hurts.
Dude, it's crazy. My mom tried to commit suicide 3 times.
Are you serious?
Yeah, dude. And I remember, you know, each time... Because I was like, yo, dude, it's so painful when I think about it. It gives me the shakes. Because I remember getting home from school. My mom's passed out. There's pills all over the floor. And I remember calling my dad's side of the family. And I'm like, guys, I don't know what to do. My mom's dying, whatever. Yeah, and I remember...
How old were you?
Dude, I was probably 10 or 11.
Shucks.
And I remember calling my dad and he's like, I don't care. And I remember saying to him, I said, fuck you.
What?
And I said to him, fuck you. My mom will live and you'll pay for this. And I got my mom to the hospital and my dad pitched up to the hospital and tried to beat me up because I'd sworn at him on the phone. And I think from that day I was like, never again will my mom and I depend on anyone for anything, whether it's family or no family. And I think, and I was like, you know, I'm going to work so hard to give my mom the world.
Yeah.
And I think that's for me was what kept, exactly what you're saying, kept me out of not being a drug addict, kept me from not being on the streets. Because I was so lonely and consumed by what I was going through, I was thinking about what is the solution? What can I do?
Absolutely.
How can I be better?
That's the same thing that I've been going through all my life. It's how can I give my mom the best life ever? I think that's what drives me is...
No.
How can I give my mom the best life ever? How can my mom go out every Monday to Tasha's or to Jamelli or whatever and have breakfast and chill? What can I do for my mom to make her a better person? I saw my mom as a domestic worker. She used to wake up at 4, left the house at 5, came back at 8.
Yeah.
Every day, Monday to Friday.
Yeah.
So I never had an opportunity to actually sit down. And now we do, but like back in the day, it was, we could never sit down. Like she'd find me when she comes back from home, I'm like sleeping or I'm watching TV and we can't catch up really. You know,
can I ask something? You know, with your mom working and with you going through whatever you're going through, did you ever have time to have fun or be a kid? Do you think you had a childhood?
My childhood was not really...
A childhood in your eyes?
Yeah, it was okay, man. It wasn't... I don't think I had the best childhood ever.
Yes.
I don't think I had the best childhood ever because my mom was never there. My grandparents were there and they probably tried to play that the role of parents, but they were not my mom and I was going through my own stuff, which they never understood what I was going through. And me not being able to play with kids on the street, it probably was even worse. It made it worse because everyone around the house is women. My cousins are all ladies, and I'm the only guy, so I really can't express my emotions to anyone.
Yeah.
So my childhood wasn't really that great, but my sister did make it great. I remember my sister is my assistant now. She works for me.
Yeah. How old is your sister? Older or younger?
She's younger. She's older.
Yeah.
She's 29 this year.
Cool.
And we used to fight a lot. We used to really fight a lot, but we'd have great time together. And our parents went there. But it wasn't really a glamorous childhood. It was okay. It was just okay, man.
So going back, so how did you make it out? So how did you, basically now let's go into becoming Tip of the Gene Maker.
Yeah.
So how did you then leave home, or how did you step into, you know, the fashion field, realizing there's potential here?
So in grade 9, I joined the choir. Was in the church choir for 4 years. For 3 years, rather. And my friends and I used to share our dreams and aspirations. This is what we want to do.
So you were a young Lundi. Rest in peace. Rest in peace to Lundi. But you
probably No, I was mad at church choir because they never gave me an opportunity to lead a song.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know why. I just think I have a beautiful voice.
Yeah.
And they never gave me a
chance. Well, before the end of the show, you can give us a bit of a rundown, and I think the people can judge.
And then, so we used to share our dreams. This is what we want to do. And there was this one guy, Kenna. Kenna used to work with celebrities and everyone, and we aspire to be like Kenna, you know, like, wow, Kenna brought celebrities to our church when we had gigs and events. And we always wanted to be like Kenna. Kenna was so cool. He was free spirit. He was a God to us. And we always had that conversation, guys. When we leave matric, we're going to be filmmakers. Wu was going to be an actor. I was going to be a cinematographer. Jules was going to be a sound guy. We were a perfect team.
Yeah.
And I think we were so...
So you always had the creative neck. You're always involved within the arts.
I was always involved within the arts.
I
was always, especially like behind technical stuff.
Yeah.
And when we finally finished our matric, we had a chance to go to varsity. I applied at AFTA, studied cinematography. We all applied at AFTA.
Yeah.
And we were all accepted, but I was the only person who could go into the school because I was a private institution. And my mom had some change saved up, which allowed me to register in the school. And we stayed together with my friends. We left the house. We left home on the 15th of January in 2010. Yeah. And schools were opening probably on the 15th of April, of February. But our desire to come to Joburg and become famous.
So you dropped out of school.
I dropped out of school, yeah.
I'm also a school dropout.
I'm a varsity dropout, man.
Like, same, yeah. I dropped out twice. Yeah, I dropped out because my mom, number one, ran out of money for my first year. But actually, people don't actually even know is that I was failing at fashion school. I just couldn't fit in. You, dude. I couldn't draw. But I had the straight man idea, but I couldn't draw. I couldn't do shit.
Yeah.
And I failed, dude. And I remember trying to express to these people, about, yo,
I know what I want.
I'm good at this thing. Yeah. I have this idea. And just no one was like, everyone was just like,
so with me at film school, I discovered that like I love fashion more than anything. I was so in touch with the fashion industry. Like I knew what was going on.
Yeah, when I met you, you're a hippie guy. You're quite hip.
I was very hip. Yeah, I knew what was happening and I knew what I wanted. And Swoo was like, dude, Tepo, I can see you're not into this film thing. Drop out, brother. I was like, alright, cool. Let me go break the news to my parents. I told them, like, listen, I want to drop out. I want to do fashion. They're like, Tepo, I was noktunga. You can't even sew. I'm like, it's not about sewing. I want to be a stylist. They're like, it's up to you, guys. So I enrolled at UJ.
Yeah.
Fashion design. Dude, fashion school is hard.
Yeah.
Fashion school.
But I'm sure you did better than I did.
I tried, man. I really tried. I stayed in school for like 10 months. It was really hard. I had classes back to back. Like I was in class from 8 till 4 every day, Monday to Friday. It didn't feel like varsity. It felt like I felt like I was trapped. But I probably enjoyed like 5 modules within the whole course. And due to financial difficulties, I had to drop out. And that's when this whole journey with the Gene Maker, with me just really knowing that I want to make jeans as opposed to be a stylist really started.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. And then tell me your journey into African Swiss.
So in 2012, when I dropped out in 2011. So 2012, I met a guy called Philippe Mazibugo. I was like, yo, Philippe, I used to see you on TV when I was a kid. And I really...
Philippe the stylist.
Philippe the stylist, yeah.
Yes.
I was like, Philippe, I really want to do what you do. He's like, oh, okay, cool. Gave me his numbers. I was like, what? He's like, call me tomorrow. Called him tomorrow. He's like, come join me at Nino's. Let's have lunch. Had lunch with Philippe. I told him this is what I want to do. I don't know how to explain it to my parents. I'm a dropout. I'm doing promotions. I'm
blogging. Just for a second, shout out to Philippe Mazibugo. People don't actually know, I think I should have him on the show actually. Philippe Mazibugo is the godfather of styling in the country.
He is.
He's behind Osimpiwe Dana. He's worked with Abo Thandisa Mazwai conceptually, creatively. Like the work that he has put together and the quality of bringing Africanism into design.
Yeah.
That guy has been under for the last 10 years. And people don't give him his props.
People don't give him his props.
So props to Philippe.
Props to Philippe. Every time when I see him, I'm like, thank you.
Yeah,
that's all I say.
Yeah. So you meet at Nino's.
I meet at Nino's.
Rosebank.
Gandhi Square. So they had Nino's in Gandhi Square. We meet at Nino's. We spend like 2 hours.
And what year
there.
Is this?
This is 2012.
2012.
Yeah. So he's like, yo, I have a friend of mine, Ole, let's go meet him. So we walked to Newtown, because the walking distance, we walked to Newtown to Capital, I think. It was Capital or whatever, I forgot what it was. Sophia Town.
Yes.
And we meet this guy, Oleli Dimo, the founder of
House of Ole.
House of Ole.
Yes.
And I was like, damn, this guy a year ago, he was on GQ's Best Dressed. I used to follow this guy for a while. Wow. And I'm just starstruck.
What's happening with me?
Like, what, God must be playing tricks on me. Ole says to me, listen, boy, you're going to chill with us for the next couple of weeks. Philippe he's directing Ole's 10th anniversary within the fashion industry.
Yeah.
And you're going to chill with us. You're going to learn. You're going to just watch and learn what we do. You're hanging with the big boys. So just watch and learn. And we drove around in Ole's Jeep. I was like, oh my God. I was just starstruck the whole time. And how I met Tato was we were chilling at Tasha's, having a meeting about the show, celebrating 10 years anniversary of Ole being in the fashion industry at SA Fashion Week. Tato used to be Ole's production manager.
Oh, wow.
So Tato and I
hanged out quite a lot.
Yeah, we hanged out quite a lot. So when we used to buy buttons, Tato would call me, yo, let's go buy buttons. Let's go do this. I'm going to show you the trade, what happens within the industry, what happens within the fashion business of Ole. And we started talking with Tato and he told me, I have this brand called African Swiss. I have t-shirts. I'm selling them at Soweto. I'm like, wow, I love the name. He's like, yeah, we should link up after this, you know?
African Swiss.
Yeah, and then the show went on. It was finished. And then we all separated. I met Maps, by the way, through that show. Yeah. Kenzero, Ricky Rick was part of it, Kuela from Kwane Experience, a whole lot of people who are big in the industry now.
Influential.
We're part of that show.
Shout out to Ricky. Ricky's been pushing this fashion thing.
Ricky's been at this thing.
He's struggling. He's flourishing.
Yeah.
But anyways, back to your story. So you met all these influential people.
Yeah.
Afterwards, you split up.
I started blogging. I started a brand called Style Architects. And then I was blogging. I was selling vintage
Star clothes. Architects. Yeah. I think that's when I sort of met you during that period of time. Yeah.
Started blogging. We started selling vintage clothes. We started selling vintage shoes, vintage everything. I started selling, because I was trying to discover what to do.
Yeah.
I kind of got a bit of influence. I kind of got a bit of following. And Tato, that's 2013. Tato calls me. He's like, Tepo, I see you popping, man. There's something happening about you. Something is brewing. Let's link up. Let's work together. And also got a call from Street Cred. The guys from Street Cred, they're like, yo, we want you to be a hairstylist of the Street Cred 2013. I think it was the last one they had. And I was like, wow, all right, cool. So Tato and I met a week before Street Cred. And he's like, listen, I have this expertise.
Yes.
I think you have this expertise. And I was working with Vusi Ndinisa, and Vusi was like more on the business side of things, the paperwork, you know, the administration of the business. And we kind of formed a team, and we decided to be partners within African Swiss. And Tat, I was like, okay, what's the vision for African Swiss? It's like, he told me his vision for African Swiss, and I told him my vision for Africa, what I think African Swiss could be. And when we sat down, we're like, we need to specialize in something for people to really recognize us. So we can't be making everything. We need to be known for setting up for something. And we were all wearing jeans. We're like, okay, let's focus on jeans, because that's what we love. That's what we're always wearing. And it was more of a nostalgic thing for us, because we all have memories with jeans. We all have, we grew up wearing jeans, and it became a thing with us. And that's when the denim bug really bit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. And then how did you then move from the journey moving from African Swiss and starting Tsepo the Jean Maker?
So at the time, so African Swiss, I was part of African Swiss for 3 years actually.
Yeah.
And I wasn't fulfilled.
Actually, how did you meet me? How did you find me?
I met you through Ria.
Ria Kobane. Yes.
I met you through Ria, and it's like, no, this is Sia Beile from Dread Man. He's gonna pop in the next 2 years, just watch this space. I'm like, I see ya, what's up, brother?
Yeah.
And that's where he started. I wasn't really satisfied with what I was doing.
Were you a shareholder in African Swiss?
Yeah, I was shareholder.
Okay.
So we're all equal shareholders, because the business didn't have anything. We were starting from scratch. Like, everything was from the bottom. And we managed to make, like, within 4 months of us becoming partners, we found another partner who invested in us, and we opened a store and showcased at Fashion Week.
Yes,
and
I remember that. And it popped.
That's when the business was popping. You know, it was, and we didn't know really what we were doing. It was really exciting. You know, like, we just jumped into it, and everyone just agrees.
Did it.
Everything is like coming towards our way. It's just amazing. And but in the midst of everything, I wasn't satisfied.
Why do you think you are not satisfied?
We're making clothes that are funky, very streetwear, and
more formal, more gentleman, more simpler.
I'm more quirky.
So the creative direction wasn't necessarily where you wanted to take your aesthetic.
I want guys to wear my jeans to the office, to a boardroom meeting, to a braai.
And African Swiss is quite a cool, funky brand that's out there. I mean, I remember I styled Somizi for the summers in African Swiss, and it worked so well for their award show, because it was a show.
I wanted my stuff to be something that I wear on
classic
a daily basis.
You wanted to be the
timeless.
You wanted to be our Levi's, basically. You're building your own Levi.
Ralph Lauren.
Tommy Hilfiger.
Yeah. It's quirky. It's timeless. It's classic. Yeah. It's simple.
But
it's
functional. Starting your brand, wasn't it scary for you in terms of you would be going against the market?
It was
like
scary.
Levi's and all that wasn't. And also, how do you get people to buy into Tsepo the Jean Maker? Isn't that also very difficult?
It's very difficult. Tsepo the Jean Maker was my Instagram name when I was part of African Swiss. And so when I left, I was like, this is the vision I have. And I got a creative team. Guys, this is what I want to do. And they're like, all right, cool. Came up with beautiful names. Like, there were plenty of names. And then Swoo was like, Tsepo, come here. I can see you beating around the bush. Go with Tsepo the Jean Maker. Because people already follow Tsepo the Jean Maker, and they know Tsepo the Jean Maker. And you can do something. There's a story behind that, you know?
Yes.
Like, it's going to drive a whole lot of talkability, conversations around Tsepo the Jean Maker. Why Tsepo? Why that? You know, so that's how we actually ran with Tsepo the Jean Maker. And it was really scary for, I started in November 2015.
Yeah.
And it was extremely scary. Like, starting a business is hard.
Yeah.
Especially
as a black entrepreneur, there's no money, number one.
There's no money.
The support structures, the systems. And I think that's what I'm going to be talking about in the next episode with Inga, who founded Ndalo, is that the what are the challenges of being a young black entrepreneur? And that is, you know, getting funding is the most difficult thing. Getting even the resources. The fact that in South Africa we still struggle with data is bullshit.
It's because fucking bullshit, man.
Our businesses that we run depend online.
Data.
And data is so bloody expensive. And I don't know why government isn't, you know, kicking
investing in that, or intervening
in terms of data prices.
Yeah. So it's a really, really scary space to be in, and now me being alone, because I'm used to having three guys who someone is responsible for that. If that department fails, you can blame it on somebody else.
Same thing that I went through. Yeah. Like, bro, like, I remember when I bought out my business partners and I went, you know, and most people don't know this, because towards the end of last year, actually, I had business partners I bought out. And, you know, when I was going through a lot of it, I was very emotional, because it's not easy.
It's not easy.
You know, but you want to take ownership of what's yours.
Absolutely.
And most people don't understand. As young black creatives, we don't own our work.
We don't.
And for me, it felt very important to fight to own my work. And I'm proud to say that I own everything that has to do with the 3D
Man.
But, dude, the toughest thing in the last couple of months is building those structures. And, like, lawyers, accountants, paying for UIF for your employees,
administration
running costs, my tax. People don't know. Like, that's it's so tough. And I wish, you know, services were more available or within reach for us young creatives or young businessmen to have access to. So I've had to invest a lot of money in that.
I'm lucky right now that I found a creative incubator.
Yeah.
It's called the JNP Hive, based in Bramfontein.
Yes, I've heard of them. I think they've emailed me once or twice, but I've just never responded. I'm bad with emails. I'm sorry, Jobbik Hive.
and they really took me in, and they kind of helping me build the business that I'm building today. And they're investing within the business. They're putting structures. They're finding me mentors. They're helping me build a proper team. Because one thing that I told them, that, guys, I struggle with the team. I had a team in place, but it's really hard building people who are responsible. It's hard building people who can take ownership of departments. It's really hard, especially sometimes you think people have the same vision as you, but they don't.
And they don't, and sometimes you go in trusting people and you get hurt.
You get hurt.
I recently
you lose money.
It's crazy. I recently had to let someone go of my company, and not only have I lost a friend, but I lost a great employee.
Absolutely.
And it's sad, but sometimes when you're an entrepreneur, you have to take
that hard stand. Yeah. So when I said to the JNP Hive, listen, guys, this is what I need. I need to build a team, a proper team, and that's what I'm doing this entire year. Building the right team.
So Temple the Gene Maker, now the brand is in its infancy stage. You're building the right foundation.
Yeah.
I know you have a collection that's
coming out. Yeah.
Tell me a bit more about the collection.
So the collection is called Wenawetwa.
Wenawetwa.
Yeah. Okay. It's a beautiful name.
It is a beautiful name. Why are you looking like in love? Who's it inspired by?
Wenawetwa is, she's my ex-girlfriend.
Yes.
And I just love the name from the get-go.
Wenawetwa.
Yeah. And so the range is, I'm making 30 jeans.
Oh, wow.
And in that 30
jeans. 30 styles or 30 jeans?
Just 30 jeans, one style. So
can I get one?
Yeah, you'll get one. I'll buy one.
I'll buy one.
There's a black color and there's a blue color.
Okay.
Yeah, so it's very presidential, it's very high end, the material is very nice, it's very soft to see.
Do you get your jeans made locally?
I get my jeans made locally in town.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So you get denim.
Everything that I make.
And even that,
locally.
So, you know, what made you come in? You could have made your jeans in China.
Absolutely.
So
and
what
it's
made you
in China.
So what consciously made you to invest in doing it locally?
It's, for me, it was within reach. And my business is still in its infancy stage. And I need to be there most of the time when everything is happening. I need to see what's up. I need to
You want to be through the process. You don't want to just put an order and then 500 jeans arrive and all of them are not the right cut. So you wanted to craft them a bit more.
I wanted to craft them a bit more. And I believe that I wanted to also create employment for a couple of people. Like, I'm employing my family, my friend. I wanted to create employment for people, and that's what really drove me as an entrepreneur. From a young age, I wanted to help people. My granny helps people every day of her life. There's people coming in, please pray for me, I need a job. And then she prays, and then they believe.
Yes.
And from that belief, they could probably find a job. And for me, it's when they come back, it's wow, they bring back money to her. They give her money, thank you very much. But what she did was just put in the belief, believe in yourself. Go
believe in what you do.
Believe in what you do. And that's what I always wanted to do, is to help people.
But I mean, let's dive more into that. I mean, about hiring your family. I'm also on the same sort of way of thinking. I hire people that I trust, sometimes my friends or my family. And looking at my family, you carry those huge responsibility of having to look after family. What is that responsibility like for you? And also the fact that money, I mean, I know that I'm new money. So when I first got my first paycheck, I blew it. So even with you, how have you adapted to money and understanding money and working with money and also managing family with money?
It's really hard. I never grew up with money. So money is a new concept to me.
It is. It's 10K is a lot of money.
Dude, like
20,000 is a lot of money. So it's like, oh my God.
6,000 is a lot of money.
Yes.
You can blow it within 2 days and you're like, how?
You can blow on expensive data.
Dude, like you can, in small stuff. And me having a team really allowed me to start thinking like a businessman. Thinking like a business. And I'm the only guy in my family, and they look up to me.
Yeah.
And I've always wanted to employ my own. I want to be like Italians and the Jewish guys. They start home and then they take it outside.
And how fucking crazy is that? Yeah. Like, I think going into that, I know, guys, if you're listening, we're talking about a lot of topics, but please try keep up. Okay. One of the things that pisses me off the most is that, like, as black people, when we hire people that we trust, when we hire friends, when we hire family, when we hire, because generally as a businessman, I have to trust the people that I work with, because it's my baby, it's my company. And, you know, you will get a lot of people criticizing that. And I'm like, but white folk and Jewish people have been
doing
it. It happens every fucking day.
Time. Yeah.
So why is it that when, as black people, want to try build wealth within our families, within our communities, and reserve that wealth and grow that wealth, why is that a problem? Please tweet us. I actually want to know, why is that a problem?
Why is it a problem?
Why is it at hashtag the thread exchange? Why is that a problem? I don't understand.
I have that thing. Like, I'm going to employ my family. I make sure that I feed my home first.
Yeah.
I think we once had a conversation with my grandparents and everybody at home, my aunts and everyone. I was like, listen, no, I don't need money from you guys, because I know you guys don't have money. All I need from you is support. And when you guys call me and tell me, Tsepo, you're doing a great job, it boosts my ego.
Yes.
It keeps me going, because that's all I need.
And also they need to
need.
Give you your space to do your thing. And
absolutely.
I think that's something I also had to be vocal with my family. I'm like, listen, guys, like, don't call me when there's a problem. Don't call me to stress me. Sometimes just call me to check up.
That's it. That's all I need.
That's
that.
All I, and sometimes I need, just leave me alone, because I also love my personal space to do what I need to do.
Yeah. So I had that conversation and was like, all right, cool. And it really changed the conversation around my family. They started being my evangelists, you know.
Yeah.
Everywhere they go, they spread the word, Tsepo the jean maker, buy his jeans. My aunt's gonna say, yo, Tsepo, there's a guy who wants jeans, please sort him out. There's a guy who wants this, please sort him out. So he became my evangelist. And I'm a staunch believer of me bringing wealth within my family and spreading it out to the community. Because my goal is to empower the community, is to inspire a community, is to inspire a nation. And the only way for me to do it, I have to start home first. If my home is fine, then I can be able to spread my wealth outside.
Yeah, and then everything else sort of falls into place.
Everything else falls into place.
Now, let's talk about, I mean, also as young entrepreneurs, I think the one thing we don't have is a life.
Yeah.
You know, tell me about you outside of the work that you do.
Uh-huh.
I mean, do you get to enjoy your life? Do you have a girlfriend? You know, looking at your history, I mean, you know, I think that's something that really affects me, and something that I'm dealing with is that because what happened to me as a child, it's affected my trust in terms of, you know, intimate relationships with women.
Yeah.
I'm trying to date, but it's really, really hard. Yeah. Do you think, and also now running a business on top of that is another stress.
Makes it worse.
So it's hard. So how do you
balance.
Deal with that, and how do you find that balance?
I can't find that balance. It's really hard.
Where is the balance? Everyone keeps talking. I'm like, guys, I can't find it. The moment I think I found a balance, life
think,
is just
I
like,
we're
hey,
we're still
you're
young, Sia. You know,
yeah.
We're still too young to be in like very serious relationships. I think I'm in a point in my life where I want to play around. You know, I've
so you're a bit of a hoe.
Kangani.
Do you slide in the DMs and Instagram? How do you approach? Do you slide in the DMs?
Sometimes, just like a couple of pictures. And then just plant a seed, man. You just plant a seed. But let's not talk about
it. But I think it's good to to not necessarily play the field. I wouldn't put it like that. But yeah. It's good to explore, go on dates,
absolutely.
Find out what you like, find out what you don't like. And I think we live in a time where, I mean, I think being in a relationship is a great thing. Yeah. I think it's a beautiful thing. And we see Abu Kim and Kanye. Yeah. We see all these big celebrity couples. And we're like, oh, I need to be in a relationship. Yeah. And we forget that it's a process. Like, we need time to grow. And I think social media, and I think one of the negative effects of media online especially is that things have progressed really fast and people are growing up so young.
Quick.
Look at Kylie Jenner, for example. Now it's normal to be 17 and be in a serious relationship and having sex and all this crazy stuff. So I think we forget that, listen, we're human, we're young, and
we're allowed to,
you need to grow into things. I think for me that's one of the fundamental parts, is to grow into those
things. I'm a late bloomer, so relationships started.
I lost my virginity at 20, and people don't believe me.
Me too.
I was 20.
I lost my virginity at 19.
But I lost it in a threesome. How crazy?
How?
I lost it in a threesome, and it was my someone I was seeing at the time and her friend, and it was like, listen, we all trust each other. Let's just do it, and it was pretty
wild.
And I handled it pretty well. But I mean, since then, I've stopped doing those kind of things. I'm responsible now.
I'm sure you
did. Yeah. Please, guys, practice safe sex.
Yeah.
Like, we're not condoning being irresponsible.
No, not at all. With my life, when I broke up with my ex-girlfriend, and I told myself, you know what, Tsepo, for the past 2 years, we've been breaking people's hearts. Because these girls come with intentions, man. They want to get married. They want to move in with you. They want to, you know, and you're still trying to find your feet. You're still trying to find the type of man you are. And I don't have that much money, so I don't know the type of man
each time
I get
asked. Each time I'm, because I my company, actually my company is female run. I'm part of that, and so I'm constantly surrounded by women. And it's always like, where are the good guys? I'm like, we're here. We're just building businesses. We're selling out our shit. You know, you want to date a guy that's ambitious, running a company,
but
it's actually hard. It's not that kind of guy.
Because I know when business is not going well, you're not in a relationship anymore. Like, my girlfriend will be sitting there and she's talking. I don't hear
and
anything.
And also for me, it's a thing of, it's hard to relate. And emotionally we're fucked up and dealing with a lot from our past. And now this whole business thing, it's so hard for me to share that with someone else, because it's always like, you don't understand. And they really don't. And they don't have to.
They can't. Yeah.
And, you know, because you spend your life as an entrepreneur and someone who's lonely and whatnot, and you spend your life jumping between family, friends, business, and you're never in a space long enough to see it grow. Because you're constantly jumping around. And that's what makes it lonely.
You know what?
So when you're talking to a girl, she will never understand. And that's frustrating,
I once met this guy and he wanted to be my mentor, and he asked me about my journey and where I come from, what I've done, my schooling, and I told him I dropped out twice, and he sent me an email like, you know what's your problem, Tepo? You never start and you never finish what you started. I was like,
oh wow,
because he asked me everything, my relationships, my everything. I was like, okay, that's really deep. And now I'm into something that I'm devoting my life, my all. It's my name. It's my my family is in there.
Yeah.
My cousin keeps on watching. He watches me all the time. Yo, how's business, brother? He's in grade 6, and it's like, yo, how's business, brother? It's like, I stopped that thing, man. It's hard, you know. Like, he looks up to me. I'm a god to him, and I can't leave this thing. You know, I'm in a place where I finally found my voice. This is a character I've always wanted to play. And it has come into life. It's coming to play.
Yeah.
And a whole lot of people now are starting to rub off to the idea of the Gene Maker.
Yeah.
And people are starting to buy jeans.
And we did our collaboration. When are you doing the next one? You've been running away from guys. Tsepo and I have released a t-shirt line that says, "Law, you're not the threaded man." And like, they sold out. People were going crazy for them. And now people are asking for more. And each time I walk around, people are like, "We're going to get those t-shirts. Where are those t-shirts?" Yeah. And this guy, I can't get a hold of him because he's famous now.
Really,
and then he had a dinner and didn't invite me. I'm so sad.
Askies, dude. Askies.
Why didn't you invite me to the dinner?
I wasn't handling the guest list.
Yo, I'm gonna do the same to you. I'm not handling the guest list.
Don't do that. Like, why, I'm really
actually
apologize.
Hurt. Like, guys, I'm not fucking around.
Really,
I'm actually
apologize.
Hurt. I remember going through Instagram. I'm like, but we're friends though, and we business partners in some of the things I'm that sorry, we do. I'm not invited. I was like, yo,
I sincerely apologize. This is a public announcement. I am sorry for treating you like that. I'm sorry for not inviting you. A whole lot of people were really hurt by that, actually.
Yeah.
But
it's okay. I mean, it's business. Yeah. You had to do what you had to do.
Yeah.
And I think also, I mean, I'm joking. I'm not sad. the beauty and the thing, that's the thing about it being an entrepreneur and what family and friends need to understand is that they're not entitled.
Yes.
You know, and I think when people, you know, are part of your journey, they feel entitled that, oh, Tipple's having a dinner, I have to be there. But you made a business decision. You wanted those certain people to be at that dinner. I think that's, I mean, I also hosted the 300 year dinners as well in Cape Town and Joburg. And a lot of people are like, you didn't invite me. I'm like, guys, it's not about you being my friend or my friend, but for me it's about, it's a business. You know,
I'm running a business.
People demand a lot. Like, they're like,
people demand,
I want this, I want that, I want this, I want that.
People demand, and I think one of the hardest things as an entrepreneur is saying no. It's just drawing that line, guys. No, for this you can't. For this you can't. For this you can't. You know, but the dinner was beautiful, by the way.
Yeah.
I'm hosting another one. I'm gonna do two dinners a year.
Yeah.
And I'm gonna invite people who inspire me. I invite the first 12 guests were really people who I looked up to.
Yeah.
For the past 10 years.
Yeah.
Motebe, I aspire. That guy inspires me a lot, and those are the type of people that I really wanted to be around and get a second opinion from them.
What do they think? And have them interact with the brand.
Because you're gonna tell me good things.
I know. I'm honest with you. I'll tell you good and bad things.
You know, and they were very honest with me. And yo, this is wrong. This is right. If you want to build, this is what you do. And I'm a grot man. You know, it's OGs, and I wanted to get there. And I wanted to be in the same space as them.
Yeah,
I've always, and Tipo the Gene Maker has allowed me to be in the same space as people who are doing great things, amazing things, and has given me a voice in the public.
Wow, man, that's incredible. I think to wrap up, what would your words be to young entrepreneurs who find themselves relating to your story, who've been in the same shoes, who struggle with the same things? You know, what advice do you have for them?
Do you, man? Like, I think I was listening to Ralph Lauren, and what he said was, he started his business by doing stuff that he likes.
Yeah.
Clothes that he wants
that
to
was
wear.
True to him.
Stuff that's true to him. I'm inspired by life. I'm inspired by individuals. I'm inspired by stuff that I see. And just do what you love.
Yeah.
Follow your dreams. Follow your heart. Believe in it. If you believe in it, you can do it all, man. Like, it's all about the belief. Like I told you, my granny used to pray for people, and they leave the house running, and then when they come back,
I think
they believe. So just believe. Be convicted. I'm convicted. I dream about Tipple the Gene Maker. When I meet people and get their numbers, I'm like, yo, what's your name? It's like Sipo. I'm like, alright, cool. Tipple the Gene Maker. That's how convicted I am.
Yeah,
you know, I'm really convicted. And if you're convicted, anything is possible, man.
Yeah. I think, I'll follow the same suit. And I think, you know, what I will say is, and what I've picked up from our conversation is that it's a process.
It's a process.
Trust the process.
It's
you know, growth is a process.
Yeah. Yeah.
Things sometimes don't happen at the time that you want them
Definitely.
To, but believe and trust, you know, and as we, and as you heard in our conversation today, that we don't have it all figured out. We are young guys.
We still try.
We come from disadvantaged backgrounds, but we fight every day and we trust the process, and we've been able to get to where we are because, you know, we keep going. We don't give up on the process.
Absolutely.
And I think many young black people, many young entrepreneurs, is that some of you give up way too early because you want it to come now. You're seeing Abantu on Instagram being successful
popping,
and they're popping, and you think, oh, when is my time coming? Don't stress. Your time is coming, and God has you by his side.
Absolutely.
You know, and there's nothing that, no dream has an expiry date, and when you make it, you'll be relevant for your time, and you'll be the person for your time. All of us come and go in this thing, you know. And
Tebe Kalifeng said to me, "Tipo, you're 25, and you're allowed to make mistakes, man.
Yeah,
make mistakes, but the most important thing is what do you learn after your mistakes, and how do you come back from your mistakes?
Yeah,
that's what makes you a great entrepreneur. And it takes 10 years to be an overnight success.
Yes,
I was chilling with Nelson Makamo. Nelson Makamo was in the industry when we were in grade 7 or grade 8.
He's been at it.
And today he's Nelson Makamo, and people don't understand. To most people, he's an overnight success, but he's been at
social media, I think, brings that.
Mass media, you know, we play We rub shoulders with people who are in mass media, and you discover that they kind of make you a overnight success. And if you're not ready for that, it's gonna fuck you up, man.
Yeah. Oh, guys. I wish we could continue this conversation. I'm Siyabonga Beile with Tebo the Gene Maker. Thank you so much for coming.
Thank you for having me.
This is the 3L Exchange. The podcast will be out very soon, so you can keep listening to it over and over again. Please don't forget to tweet us hashtag at the 3L Exchange. Also, I'm allowing people to suggest guests that you'd like to see on the show. Guests that are progressive, cultured, and brave. Mm-hmm. I am Siyabonga Beile, and I am signing out for this week. Up until next week for the next episode.
Cheers.
Cheers.
Progressive, cultured, and brave.
And now, the moment you've all been waiting for.
The Threaded Exchange with Sia Beile. Live on Cliff Central.
CliffCentral.com.